The NFL preseason got underway with the Hall of Fame game, and we are just under 642 hours away from the start of the NFL season. We're here this week to talk about the NFC East and the AFC East with regular analyst Ollie Dawes.
Hello, folks. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Dawes or at Second City Fanatics.
Thanks, Ollie. We've also got Dan Harrison, who was with us last week.
Hi, guys. You can find me at Diary of a Fat.
Possibly the best Britain name ever. And we've got our New York Giants fan with us this week, Will Babington.
Hi, guys. You can find me on Twitter at WBabington. Alternatively, if you fancy something a bit different, you can check out my NASCAR feed at NASCARFansUK.
I am your host, Ben Rolfe, and you can find me at BRolfe1507 or at 4th and Inches podcast on Twitter. Last week, me, Ollie and Dan talked about our favourite teams and our favourite moments. This week, Will, if you tell us why you support the New York Giants and what is your most memorable moment of watching the NFL?
I've been supporting the New York Giants since 1986 when they won their first Super Bowl. I was only six at the time, got sent a T-shirt from New York from a family member over there and just basically started following them ever since, although it's only been in the last, say, 5 or 6 years that I've really started sort of getting into it properly. Favourite moment from Giants? Well, got to go back to the Super Bowl 2007 season and David Tyree's helmet catch. Just one of the most brilliant moments of my watching American football. I had to be up early on Monday morning, and after the Patriots scored with about 5 minutes to go, I was thinking about going to bed and just sacking the rest of it off. And I thought, no, I've waited this long. I'm going to stay up and watch it. And then when Manning just put the ball up there, Tyree, people all around it, oh, this is it, the game's over, it's going to get picked. And for him to come down with it, how he did, and in the style he did, oh, I was running around the room at 3 a.m, screaming my head off. I was a loon. And then obviously drove up the field and, you know, Plexico got the touchdown and Super Bowl was won, and it was just brilliant. And yeah, to me, that's my favourite ever Giants moment.
Just as 2 points of reference, that one, he's been a New York Giant fan longer than I've been alive. And two, that is my least favourite moment in the NFL ever as a New England Patriots fan. Anyway, we're going to get started with our first section that's going to become a regular section for us. It is the two-minute drill. I'm going to ask a question and our three analysts have a chance to tell us all their opinions inside 2 minutes. Okay, guys, the question this week is, if Darren McFadden manages to stay healthy for the rest of the season, can he be the number one fantasy running back this year? Go.
Maybe not number one, but certainly in the higher reaches of the fantasy football stats, so to speak. But yeah, the problem is just staying healthy for him, isn't it?
Absolutely. I agree. He won't be number one, but he'll certainly be up there. I mean, if you go back to his 2010 season, you know, he ran for, was it just under 1,200 yards? And in fact, last season, if he doubled up his runs from last season, because obviously he only played about 7 games, he would have put him 5th overall. So I think he's certainly going to be a good bet to finish in the top 5. And more importantly, I think the reason why he's going to be so good is because he's got Carson Palmer at quarterback. Someone needs to take the pressure off him. So if he could stay healthy, it's all his.
You know, I'd like to see him, you know, actually finish a season again, because he is phenomenal when he's healthy.
Even though it would be good for him to get a full season under his belt, I've just drafted Tywan Jones in the fantasy league, so McFadden can get injured as often as he likes, as far as I'm concerned.
So do you guys feel if he stays fit, he will not beat Foster, because he's not got a serious backup like Foster?
I just don't think he's as good as Foster. I think Foster's phenomenal.
That's fair enough. Well done, guys. You got that just inside 2 minutes. Right, we will move on to the news section of the podcast. The biggest news this week is potentially Joe Hayden's failed drugs test that came out yesterday. He tested positive for Adderall, which is a banned stimulant on the NFL's list, although it can commonly be prescribed to treat hyperactivity disorder. What do you guys think?
Well, to me, it was a complete surprise. I think it's an indication of a wider problem, I think, that the NFL have. Ty Sashen was also tested positive for Adderall as well last week, and he's obviously been given the format suspension. To me, the NFL need to come down hard on this. They need to come down harder than giving format suspensions. Just to bring in my other passion, which is NASCAR, we just had a driver test positive for Adderall, as it turns out, last week. And he has been kicked out by his team, and NASCAR have told him he can't compete until he goes through a rehabilitation program, which could be anywhere from a month to a year. So I think the NFL need to bring something like that in to stop these players and make it very clear to these players that they are role models. They can't be seen doing, you know, drugs, for want of a better word. I know Adderall can be prescription, but it's not what young kids should be looking up to.
Hyperactivity in Cleveland is just mind-boggling, but I do actually agree that they're not doing enough now to stop the whole drugs issue in the NFL, and maybe longer bans, or like Will says, making them go through courses and tests now to make sure they don't reoffend. I think that'd be a great idea.
I think it's a bit similar to what we were talking about, you know, last time, where we were saying about all these players and all the arrests and things like that. And it's just, considering the way Goodell came down on people for the bounty gate and everything else, you'd imagine that such harsh punishments would need to be dealt out in what is, you know, almost as bad, you know. Well, drug taking and DUIs and things like that really are as bad as, you know, the things that were going on supposedly in the Saints locker room. So I think there's got to be some level of fairness for you're doing something wrong and you're doing something wrong, regardless of the fact of, you know, what it is you're doing wrong. You're doing something wrong, you're not really, you know, you need a harsher punishment.
Yeah, I agree. A 4-game suspension, which is what they're talking about, is probably not going to be enough. But they do have a stepping up standard in the NFL, where if you're caught once, it's 4 games, and if you're caught twice, it's a year. But maybe it should be a year straight off. But whatever happens, however long he's out for, it's going to be a huge loss for Cleveland, because they were relying on him hugely for the defense this year. But some more bad news come out of Cleveland this week, actually. Trent Richardson has gone to see Dr. Andrews, which, as a baseball fan, tends to be where players go to disappear from all relevancy in fantasy. So do you think this is serious, Richardson?
It's potentially serious. I mean, I actually read today that he's actually going to have surgery on it. They're going to take out some cartilage, but they say it should only affect him for a week or so. But you've got to wonder what Browns were thinking when they drafted up taking him. He's been known to have his knee problems. I don't think they're going to get many years out of him. I mean, he's already struggling, and he hasn't even hit the rigors of the NFL yet. And this is just from a college career. I think he could turn into another Tim Couch. You know, he was drafted with a huge amount of potential, and an injury could just sort of decimate his career really before it even gets going.
I think the Browns probably could have done the homework a bit better on his knees, but if it could be a problem. But I think he'll be okay.
Actually, what I find most interesting about it is the fact of how this is going to affect everybody's fantasy seasons, because so many people have taken him quite high up in the drafts, because, you know, very impressive stat wise and looks like he was going to get all the snaps over it for the Browns and going to be potentially their entire offense. But, you know, let's look and see how this plays out now, because he's already got history with his knees, and let's just hope that, you know, we're not talking about a young guy that we're potentially never going to get to see live up to his full potential.
That was going to be my next question about the fantasy aspect. Just a quick one-word answer, guys. Which round would you take Richardson in, feel comfortable taking him in a 10-team redraft league?
We have to take him.
He will go. If he was to drop and no one else was to take him, which round would you guys feel comfortable with him in?
Seventh, maybe eighth.
I was going to go about fourth or fifth.
See, because he's currently going about second, and I think that a lot of people who are taking him in the second are going to really regret it. So I'd be over the moon if I could get him in about the fourth or fifth round, because I think there's a lot of risky running backs this year, and I think he's just another one of them.
Mm. I would only ever take him as a back.
In a dynasty, dynasty draft, he'll obviously go higher, but I don't think he should go much higher. And then the final bit of news from this week is it's sort of news but not news at the same time, and it involves Jimmy Graham. He hurt his back making a touchdown catch in practice, but he's actually fine. The Saints are trying to rest him, but according to Drew Brees, he's still running around at a million miles an hour.
Trying to do their offense some much needed good.
Yeah, he's a crucial part of their offense, and again, another guy who is going to be drafted high in fantasy this year. So there'll be a lot of fantasy owners who have been keeping their fingers and their toes crossed that he doesn't get injured in training.
Yeah, I think it's just a minor little setback. As you said, Drew Brees has always set it up and around. Joe Vitt said he's fine and taking part and everything. So, yeah, I think it's he'll be fine.
That's good, because you don't really want to see a great talent like him getting injured and missing half a season or even more potentially. So, OK, well, we'll move on to the AFC East then. And we'll start with the Buffalo Bills. The biggest question for the Bills going into the season is, will it be Spiller or Fred Jackson?
I think immediately it'll be Jackson, but Spiller really impressed at the back end of last season, to the point where I actually have him as a running back number two in one fantasy team. I think Jackson's just got to stay healthy, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much just know what I was going to say. If Jackson and Spiller can work together, then it's going to be a good... And Fitzpatrick can obviously continue his form that he came with last season. It could actually be an 8-8 season for the Bills, finally.
Yeah, I very much think in fantasy, you're going to end up probably having to take them almost back-to-back in rounds. So you're probably going to end up taking Jackson in about the fifth or sixth round at the latest. And you're not going to get many rounds before you're going to have to take Spiller. I have actually got him in an auto-draft league. I've got both of them, which is either the ideal or the nightmarish situation, because it means I've got to pick which one each week. But I'm happy to keep hold of both of them. Buffalo did actually have a good off-season. They really increased the strength of their D-line with the addition of Mario Williams and a few other key pieces. Do you think they could cause the NFC East problems, especially with Tom Brady? Do you think they could get to him this season and cause him real problems?
I don't think you bet against Super Mario, do you?
Even coming off the injury, though?
I don't, because wasn't it an arm injury? How serious was it? Yeah, so he's a big guy. I think, you know, he has impressive stats generally. I'm not sure how much it'll affect Brady, but if you take the guys lining up at the back at the Jets, whoever that ends up being at the end of the day, I wouldn't be surprised to see him rack up some fantasy stats.
I think that D-line will be very useful at stopping the Tim Tebow Express. If he gets on the field a lot for the Jets against them, I think having a D-line that strong will really help them, because you saw the Patriots use their D-line and their linebackers really well against Tebow in the playoffs last year and just absolutely negated his effect and just destroyed the Broncos. And I think Rex Ryan needs to be aware of that before he puts Tebow in for too many plays in games, that people are starting to figure him out.
I don't think starting to figure him out. I think he's well and truly figured out.
That's true. The other thing with Buffalo is their quarterback. He started off hot last year, Fitzpatrick, but he died away a little bit towards the end of the season. Do you think he can be a top-class quarterback this year? Obviously, in that division, he's only really got Brady, who's an elite quarterback. So can he be one of the better quarterbacks in that division?
Well, in that division, yes. I mean, as you said, it's only really Brady's got any competition from. It's not going to prove tricky. I mean, what he got, 3,500 odd yards, 800 odd yards or something last season. And, you know, if he could get up to four, then that's sort of his mast firmly nailed as the second best quarterback in the league, I think. Sorry, in the AFC East, in the league. In the AFC East.
I think he can become quite good, but I'm not sure he's the man to take Buffalo forward. They gave him a pretty big contract and he was inconsistent at times last year. He's got a building bond with Scott Chandler, the tight end now, and Stevie Johnson's coming on. So I think we could see a really good season from Buffalo this year.
Yeah, I think Buffalo have got a legitimate shot being the second best team in the division because of the lack of the Miami and New York Jets, in my opinion. But I don't think they'll be a wild card team this year. The one thing that Fitz has got going for him is that Chan Gailey is a hell of a head coach, and he's very good at making your plays inventive, which I think at the start of the season will really help Fitzpatrick to have another great start to his season, because it will allow him to be not gimmicky, but they find ways of getting people open in Buffalo. And with Chan Gailey there, I think he's got a legitimate shot to go off hot again and then probably die off again later on in the season. So that'll be the real challenge. We'll be trying to keep their offense hot throughout the season this year. We'll move on to the conundrum with Inside an Enigma in Miami. Now, most of the questions in Miami tend to revolve around the offense this offseason. They've had probably the worst offseason in NFL history. Everybody they've gone after, apart from Philbin, has rejected them. it seems. So even Matt Flynn chose Seattle Seahawks over them, which is an odd, odd decision. But neither of them had any receiving threats, so I can understand that. Of the three quarterbacks, who do you guys think, one, will start the season and two, will finish it?
Well, they've already named today, I think it was today, possibly yesterday, David Garrett as their starting quarterback in their depth chart. I mean, that could obviously change depending on how camp goes. But he's certainly just a stand, and he can only be a stand in, you know, at 34 years old. And he's, you know, I think he's going on to lead a team, especially if the Dolphins standard. It's going to have to be Tannehill. I mean, he's the future. He has to be the future. And I'm sure that's what the Dolphins management had in mind when they drafted him this year. I would expect to see him come in and sort of after, you know, sort of 3-4 games, maybe when he's learned a bit more of the offense, and maybe get a few plays early on as well.
I can see Matt Moore actually starting the season, because I didn't think he was awful actually at the end of last season. But I can see Tannehill finishing the season, a bit like what happened in Minnesota last year with McNabb finally handing over to Ponder.
Yeah, I think Garrard will start the season and Tannehill will come in after 5 or 6 games, and then that'll be that, so to speak.
Okay, and then the next real position that's a bit worrying for Miami, shall we say, is wide receiver. When your best receiver is Chad Johnson, for those of you who don't know, Chad Ochocinco has changed his name back to Chad Johnson because his wife did not like his surname when they got married. Do you think Chad Johnson can be a legitimate number one wide receiver this year?
I think he has to be in Miami, doesn't he?
They haven't got a lot else. That is the problem.
They traded away their best player to us, thankfully. But, you know, I can't believe we have to say that, but they're going to have to rely on him.
So as long as it's a simple playbook, which is what he seems to like, you would think that he should be okay. But
he should be, yeah. I mean, just picking up on what you said about the play, having a simple playbook as well, and it's probably worked to his advantage as well, having Tannehill as, you know, a rookie. He's going to want a nice, simple playbook as well while he learns. So I think the two of them could, hopefully, well, from Dolphin fans' point of view, work together quite well.
Yeah, the big thing for Dolphins fans has probably got to be the fact that they haven't got a young wide receiver there for Tannehill to grow with. Like, say, for example, Jacksonville have done. They've got their young quarterback and they've got their young wide receiver. I know they've done it in two separate years, but I think that has got to be Miami's focus going into next year, don't you? Like, looking towards the end of this season into next year, they've got to be looking for a young wide receiver who can grow with Tannehill, surely, because Chad Ochocinco is not going to be around forever.
Yeah, I think come 2013 draft, they'll be looking at Robert Woods out of USC and Keenan Allen out of California at the top of the draft to bring some youth at wide receiver, because outside of, I almost call him Ochocinco, outside of Johnson, who else have they got? There's Brian Hartline, Legadu Nani. I mean, it's just horrendous.
It is only slightly better than the Jacksonville Jaguars roster was, wide receiving depth chart was last year, and it's not better by much. And then, well, one of the more interesting stories to come out of Miami this week is actually Reggie Bush saying that he can be the leading rusher in the NFL this year. Now, I know he was good last year, but he's not that good, is he?
No. he's just not. No. He's a funny guy to follow on Twitter, though, I tell you. He's crazy. He's one of those guys that doesn't seem to sort of live in the real world, I don't think. I mean, most of these NFL young guys don't, because they're so famous and they've not really got a clue what it's really like. But he's brilliant. Like, he's talented, don't get me wrong. I think if you're looking at the top 15 running backs, he's probably in the top 15. I wouldn't put him in the top 10.
No, I agree with that. I mean, he was ranked 11th last year in terms of yardage, and he's not getting any younger. He's not in a team that can really help boost those figures, and top 15 I think is a sensible place to put him.
I don't know about you, but I get the feeling that Miami this year is just a little bit of a media circus with all these signing of Chad Johnson, all his name change. I kind of feel like a lot of it's done for Hard Knocks. It just kind of feels like they're doing it to try and make good television, and I might be wrong, he might come out and be good this year, but it just all seems like that all Miami seem to care about is Hard Knocks, and surely this is going to be detrimental to their season, don't you think?
I agree with the media circus. In fact, not long ago, I was trying to publish an article, and I was trying to search for a picture of Ryan Tannehill. And when you typed Ryan Tannehill's name into Google, it just came up with pictures of Lauren Tannehill. And I thought it just said a lot that she's almost more important than their new to-be franchise quarterback.
Yeah, although what I saw of Hard Knocks this episode was that they didn't have a lot of her in it, which is it is good, because Hard Knocks needs to focus on the football. But at the same time, in a way, she'll be a welcome distraction for the players, because they're not going to be too worried about the TV cameras if the TV cameras are just following her. So,
if Hard Knocks can create a moment in the Miami Dolphins situation better than the video of Antonio Cromartie trying to remember the names of all his kids, then it fights.
Okay, with that, we'll move on and look at the fantasy relevancy in Miami, because I think this is a very interesting question. I think it's quite clear-cut in Buffalo. That's why we didn't talk about it. But in Miami, is anyone going to be fantasy relevant?
I think you could take Bush as a backup.
Yeah.
If somebody, one of your starters, gets injured. But I think, offensive-wise, certainly he's probably the only one worth, you know, taking as a backup pick. I think they've got a starter pick in their squad.
Yeah, I think in a deep league, Anthony Fasano, the tight end, might get picked, but outside of that, there's not much happening.
Yeah, there's no one I'd touch there. I mean, Brandon Marshall would have been the only one had he still been there, but no, I wouldn't even look twice at Miami now for fantasy-wise.
So you wouldn't look at maybe Chad Ochocinco as a late-round flyer?
No.
No. Yeah. No.
Because the question I was going to ask was Chad Ochocinco, Randy Moss, or Terrell Owens. Which one of them three would you draft first?
Terrell Owens.
Moss. Randy Moss. Definitely Randy Moss.
See, I would be tempted to go Randy Moss just because I think he's got the most speed of the three. But I think Terrell Owens has got the best situation, because I don't think there's a lot in Seattle to really rival him if he comes out as the best receiver, whereas
absolutely.
In San Fran you've got a lot of receivers there who have all got the potential to be good, as well as Vernon Davis, who has the potential to have an epic tight end season.
Yeah, Terrell Owens, I mean, I like the guy. I'll hold my hands up, I quite like him. You know, he's determined to get back in the NFL, God bless him, and he's worked so hard to do it, and he's finally got the shot at Seattle. And you know, he's big fish, little pond in Seattle. He's going to get the ball a lot if he stays healthy and he doesn't annoy anyone. So I think if you're looking for a long shot down the order fantasy pick, I think Owens would fit quite nicely in.
Yeah, I can see that. But going back to Miami quickly, one other player who has been talked about as being maybe fantasy relevant is Daniel Thomas. Now, is he someone you'd be more willing to take a late flyer on? Because Reggie Bush has an injury history. Daniel Thomas has got a year under his belt, so he's more likely to be put in than Lamar Miller.
As a third or fourth running back, yeah, I think Daniel Thomas might be worth a pick.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I could definitely see him playing a part even with Reggie Bush fit, I could see him playing a huge part in just being there to help the offense get through the plays, because Reggie Bush can't be in every play. He's not that sort of running back, really. So we'll move on to arguably the giants of the division, the New England Patriots. Their biggest issue really is will a running back run the ball, or will it just be a pass offense? They've got enough wide receivers there that they might never have to put the ball in a running back's hands.
I mean, at the moment, I think it's going to be Stevan Ridley. Yeah. As far as I know, unless something else has happened, I haven't seen it. Now they've added Brandon Lloyd. I think you're right. I don't think they will run the ball as much as they have done in the past.
I've seen various reports this week coming out that all of the running backs, Vereen, Ridley and Woodhead, have played out the backfield. They focus a lot on their running this week, but they've also focused a lot on swing passes and screen passes. To the two, as well as actually at times spelling Aaron Hernandez in the backfield again, which we saw, it's a great strength towards the end of the season. He absolutely dominated at times out of the backfield. Do you think Aaron Hernandez is going to have to fit into that role to play a big part in the team this year? Because they've got so many options there with Jabbar Gaffney and Brandon Lloyd. They might have to fit him in there to really get him in the game.
I think it's quite a good idea using him in the backfield. I mean, like you say, he showed last year that he can do it. And he's not the number one tight end on the team, as we know. So it might end up being that he becomes a pretty good option for them at running back.
Well, you have to believe that even if Tom Brady throws for 5,000 yards this season, again, or more potentially, he could have a season for the ages with all the options he's got there. One of the receivers you feel still has to miss out, because you can't feed Brandon Lloyd, Wes Welker, Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez, as well as having Jabbar Gaffney, Dante Stallworth, and all the running backs they have. Which one of them big receivers, so to speak, do you think will miss out?
I think at the moment, probably Stallworth. I think they quite like Jabbar Gaffney as another option. Stallworth's had some trouble, I think, with the playbook. I'm sure I read that somewhere. So yeah, I think out of the receivers you named, Gaffney will be, Stallworth will be the one to miss out.
I agree with that, yeah. But he's, at the moment, a weak link, if you can call him that, in a very, very strong chain.
I have also read he's been struggling with the playbook, that maybe he's just going to be used as a guy to spell Gaffney and just run deep, maybe. Just one of them players who's just going to try and drag a safety deep and allow Welker and Lloyd and Gronkowski some room to work in the middle there. I do feel that Hernandez may struggle for his yards this year, and I do think that Gronkowski's numbers are obviously going to drop. I don't think he could repeat the season he's had. Where would you be willing to take them guys in fantasy drafts? So Gronkowski, Welker, Lloyd and Hernandez.
I'd be looking to take Gronkowski, I think, sort of 3, maybe 4, I think, if he's still there. I'd sort of place, because of his reliance that the Patriots have been placing in him, I think he could almost sort of class him as one of the high-end tight end wide receivers.
Yeah, I think with Gronkowski, I'd go as high as 2nd, to be honest. I think I had him last year and he put up consistent points every week, and even though he is a tight end, it doesn't matter to me because he's such a key part of the offense. Brandon Lloyd, maybe 5th or 6th round. I think with reuniting with Josh McDaniels could see him become a very good option in fantasy.
I'd rather take Gronkowski over Welker. If I had to take Welker, he would be down the list. I mean, I know he's been productive the last couple of years, but I don't know. There's something I just don't like about it. I mean, it's a personal thing. I just don't like him. He must be besides. But I'd take him probably 7, 8 if he's still around now as a sort of backup guy.
The final one that he performed big last season for fantasy owners is Aaron Hernandez. Would you guys be willing to take him in the top 5 tight ends, or would you be looking for the top 7 or 8? I've seen him go as high as the 3rd tight end off the board. I've seen him go as low as about the 10th tight end off the board. What do you guys feel about Aaron Hernandez this season?
I think from fantasy terms, I'd rather take someone that I knew would be the number one tight end. Someone like Vernon Davis, Jermichael Finley. When you think about it, he probably is going to go quite high. But I'd rather take other players.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'd rather have someone like Witten or Graham, I think, over him, it must be said.
Yeah, I'd definitely take Graham and Witten very, very high in PPR, because I think they're two of the most targeted tight ends in the... In the NFL, to be honest, especially Graham. He could have 100 receptions this year without even blinking his eyes.
Yeah.
So and Witten, Tony Romo just loves to throw Jason Witten. So in a PPR, I'd definitely have both of them above. And even in a non-PPR, I would take Graham as the 1st overall tight end if it was me. But I feel like he will go as the 2nd in most, because people just will hope that Gronkowski can get nearly as many touchdowns. Which one of them two would you take first, Graham or Gronkowski?
Graham.
That's a toughie.
I'd genuinely toss a coin. I can barely separate them this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I've seen them go back to back a lot. I really have. Let's just do our quick prediction that we do for the teams. New England winning the division, shall we say?
Yeah, I think so. That's a nice safe one. I'd put my house on it.
Yeah, romp the division.
Anyone brave enough to say how many games they'll win?
I'll go for 13 or 14. I really think they'll be right up there this year.
11 or 12?
Ooh. Yeah, I think I was going to go with 12. Yeah.
I'm not sure how bad, how hard your schedule is at the moment. I mean, if you take away your divisional games, which are probably going to be a joke, depending on the toughness of your schedule, you can go from as low as 11 to as high as 14.
Well, yeah. We definitely have the Broncos, the Ravens, and the Texans because they won their division.
And you've got the 49ers as well, and they could be flying. I mean, by the back of there, that's in December, they could be flying by then. But equally so, they could have crashed and burnt.
Yeah, the interesting thing is there is actually towards the end of the season, all of the Patriots' home games in like the snowy seasons are against teams that are actually warmer weather teams in general. Mm-hmm. Jacksonville, they've got... I know Jacksonville probably weren't going to be a challenge for them either way, but like San Francisco, and I think Houston comes to them quite late in the season, all warm weather
Houston
teams.
Houston comes in December as well. Yeah,
yeah, so that's going to be... A big thing for them teams to adjust to, and it could be a crucial factor, really, couldn't it?
It could. Got to love the NFL favouring the Patriots.
Right, we'll move on to the New York Jets. another circus of speaking. Quarterbacks.
I'm loving it at the moment. I just say, I just think it's brilliant. They're just such a great thing to have in the NFL.
I did hear rumours of a 20-man brawl.
There was a brawl with the rookies, apparently, got into it, and then everybody joined in. And then a bit later, Cromartie also decided he was going to have a couple of dust-ups of his own. They're just typical Jets, isn't it? Everyone's fighting each other, and Rex Ryan's got no idea what's going on. I'm just waiting for him to come out and guarantee another Super Bowl win, and we can guarantee they'll finish bottom. It'll be brilliant.
So, I presume that you guys see Mark Sanchez starting the season as quarterback. How long does he last?
I see Sanchez starting the season, lasting 3 or 4 games, Tebow coming in, Tebow lasting 2 games, Sanchez coming back in and finishing the season.
You don't see Greg McElroy getting a shot?
No, because the reason is because I think Sanchez is their favourite. I mean, I know that they've bought in Tebow. They'll soon realise, as everyone else has, that Tebow's a bag of rubbish. I mean, even I don't know if any of you saw that article by Boomer Esiason saying Jets should just get rid of Tebow now. He's rubbish. He's awful. Why did they even take him? They'll have to put him in. They spent all this money. The fans expect it. The media certainly expect it. And then they'll go back to their proper offense with Sanchez. Sanchez has the ability to lead and can do very well with.
I can actually see Tebow, and I'm going to get stick for this, but I actually really like Tebow. I don't think he's the most talented quarterback in the league, obviously, but I think it's hard not to like the guy.
No, it's very easy not to like
him. No, I do see Dan's point. I do like Tebow as a person, and I think he'd be the sort of person that if Rex Ryan, we spoke about this last week, if Rex Ryan said to him, oh, I need you to play on the offensive line, he'd go, yes, coach, I'll do it, because he's just that sort of person.
He just wants to play.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we take all the religious side away, regardless, you know, he's a guy that he did manage to take a not great team to the playoffs and managed to beat a very good team. You know, he has his talents, regardless of whether or not he should be a quarterback. You know, I've taken him in the fantasy league over at Second City as my backup, because I drafted Eli as my main quarterback, and you never know with Eli what's going to happen in the main season.
Yeah, I have actually got him in a fantasy league, a 2 quarterback league. I've got Brady and Peyton Manning as my 2 starters, and then I left quarterback after that, and I ended up with Tebow as my backup. But the fantasy owners will not mind Tebow having a couple of good weeks, even if they miss them, because it then makes him tradable. Because he was last year, he was a huge person to be traded last year, and you could get a good haul in return for him. Same sort of thing as what happened with Fitzpatrick. I actually traded Fitzpatrick in a league for Michael Vick last season when Vick was on a bad turn, and Fitzpatrick was on the way up. In fact, I think I did that in two or three leagues. I just went and picked him up off the waiver wire and traded him straight out. So I think some of these quarterbacks who might get hot at the start of the season, and Tebow who might come in and score, I could very easily see him scoring 10 to 15 fantasy points a game, even not as the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Because that's just 90 yards rushing and a touchdown. And chances are he'll probably get two touchdowns a game.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to get the play time to... I mean, as you said, I think he could only be seen as valuable for a couple of weeks. I think his star will fade pretty quickly.
Yeah, I do see him becoming, like I said, trade fodder in fantasy football. The other big name at the Jets camp beyond the defense is Santonio Holmes. He missed practice this week with a rib injury. The x-rays came back negative. How do you think Santonio Holmes is going to fare this season? Do you think he's going to like the quarterback situation? Do you think he's going to get receptions no matter what because he's the best on that team by quite a distance? I have heard them say that Cromartie's been playing at wide receiver at times, and he's even joked he's the second best wide receiver on that team. So do you think Santonio Holmes is going to be okay this season?
I think for the sake of the Jets, I think he has to be. I mean, he's got to be the sort of the calming influence, I think, really, over the offense. He needs to really stand up and be counted this season, I think. And I from a drafting point of view, I would certainly consider taking him reasonably high. I think he's certainly going to be their go-to guy. And regardless of who the quarterback who's giving him the ball, I think he should certainly get some yardage.
Yeah, I read somewhere that their offense is very much predicated around the run, with one wide receiver getting a big bulk. I don't know if you guys read it, but or have ever heard of it, but the BFD, they're called. It's a website, and I signed up to them because there was a discount going on. I got it for about $20, and they do a thing called the coaching tree, and he goes through all of the teams and all of their offenses, and he tells you like what their offense is predicated on. And in there, he said the Jets are very much built around this one wide receiver getting the majority of the targets, and there's no one else to do that. So I think he should be okay. But I don't know. Ollie, Dan, do you see it differently?
I think, like you say, on any other team, I don't think he'd do much this year, but simply because they haven't got anyone else. Stephen Hill's very, very raw. Justin Keller's okay. But, yeah, I think Holmes might be worth drafting in fantasy as a third or fourth wide receiver.
I'll agree with that. The other thing that might affect it is if it does switch the way we expect it to switch, and you see Tebow coming in after a few games, how often is Tebow going to be throwing the ball, really? Because it's not his strength.
That is one thing Sean Green could see a big upturn this season, because we saw how running backs really benefited from having Tim Tebow. And Sean Green is the perfect sort of runner to work with Tim Tebow, because he's got that bit of pace and he's a bit tough. I could see Sean Green having a good season this year if Tebow gets the starting job.
Definitely.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, he had a very strong season. Yeah, breakout season for him. And yeah, he could certainly build on that.
So would you take Sean Green, Tim Tebow, or Santonio Holmes, highest in fantasy drafts?
I'd take Green highest out of those three.
I desperately wanted Green in our draft, the second City draft, and I missed out on him and I was gutted.
Yeah, I do agree. I think he's the best one, but I do think Santonio Holmes, for the value you can get him for, is going to be good for fantasy teams this year. So I actually traded away Sidney Rice and Jermichael Finley to get him and Kyle Rudolph, it's Jermaine Gresham, and I feel that it was worth trading down the possibility of Jermichael Finley having a great year to get the potential upside that Santonio Holmes could produce. The problem is going to be trying to pick the weeks he's going to do it on. So how do we feel the Jets are going to fare this year? Worse than the Dolphins, or better than the Dolphins. I think that's how we've got to look at it, because I think them two teams are going to be the bottom feeders this year.
Yeah, I think they'll do better than the Dolphins. I mean, they've, regardless of, you know, the offense, the quarterback situation, they've got a unit there. They've got a steady unit, a coach that, you know, he's flamboyant and everything, but he's a decent coach if he just stopped predicting a Super Bowl win anyway. I think they'll finish higher than the Dolphins, but no more than that. I think they'll be lucky if they go evens this season.
Yeah, ditto, basically. It's not very high on the Jets at all this year, but Tannenbaum really likes Rex Ryan, so even if they do finish poorly, will they get rid of him? I really don't know. I think they'll end up with a high draft pick. And then the question, as usual, comes again, do they pick a quarterback?
Yeah, I think that's something that they're going to have to look at the end of the season. And they could have a surprising year, but chances are they will be picking high. So it's safe to say that we think the Patriots are going to win the division between the four of us. The Bills probably second, but not quite a wildcard team. Miami third, but maybe only just, with the Jets bringing up the rear.
Sounds about the Dolphins bringing up the rear for me.
Yeah, I think either one. I think them two are going to be very close. I think all three of them could end up being very close, but you'd hope the Bills can take all of their games off them, off Miami and New York, and finish above them. But we've seen bigger surprises happen, especially when Tebow's been involved. I'll just take this moment to say to all of you listening that you hear our opinions every week, but we'd love to hear yours. You can get in contact with us at Fourth and Inches Pod on Twitter, or our email is fourthandinchespodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to answer any of your questions, and we'd love to hear your opinions on what we think, and if you think we're wrong or if you agree with us. Right, we will move on to the NFC East now. Another division that last year produced a stunning end to it. Four teams that this year could be very strong. We'll start with the Dallas Cowboys. And I think the first place you've got to start there is Dez Bryant. We did mention him last week, but do you think he is going to get it together this season? Tony Romo really needs him, because Austin has already said that he's feeling pain in his hamstring. Do you think Dez Bryant's going to be a crucial player this year for Dallas?
For the sake of Cowboy fans everywhere, he has to be. I mean, but he's already showing this preseason that his head's not with it. You know, he's got this family issue, you know, where he apparently allegedly assaulted his mum, even though she's dropped all charges. Apparently, it's not what Cowboy fans will be wanting to read. They'll be wanting to read the positive reviews about Bryant, and it's going to be tough. I really feel sorry for Cowboy fans this season, because if Bryant doesn't turn it on, they can't keep relying on Witten as they did last season. I mean, it says something about a team when their highest receiver is a tight end. So let's hope so, for the sake of Cowboy fans.
On the Cowboys wide receivers, I think Laron Robinson might be a bigger miss than people are expecting. Whilst I don't think he'll do well in Jacksonville, I think he turned out to be a decent part of the Dallas offense, and he was a good third wide receiver for them. And at the moment, it just looks like Brian, Austin, and then a few other sort of people battling for places on the team. So Bryant really does have to get it together this season.
I very much feel, on your point, Ollie, that come about the fourth or fifth week of the season, we're going to be talking about, in terms of fantasy, who is the Dallas Cowboys' third wide receiver and how he'll be worth picking up in leagues and potentially starting, because that's what happened with Robinson last year. Teams have so much to cover in Witten, Austin and Bryant that another good receiver could really pop up and be a great help to Tony Romo if he runs his routes well and gets himself open.
Tim Benford, who he drafted, has been getting some good reviews in training camp, so he could be the guy to be the third receiver.
Yeah, he's definitely someone to keep an eye on in deep leagues, 20-team leagues, or even 16-team leagues. The other interesting bit of the Dallas offense is the running backs. DeMarco Murray looks like a shoe-in to be the number one, but do you guys have Philip Tanner or Felix Jones as the number two?
I'd have Felix Jones as the number two. I think he complements Murray very well. Put in some good-ish numbers last year, steady for a second stringer. I think he's, I'd have him over Tanner.
Yeah, whilst I'd have Felix Jones, I do remember reading that didn't he fail some sort of fitness test upon training coming back to training camp?
Yeah, three people did, didn't they, beginning of the season, but they actually let one of them go yesterday or the day before. But he's fine. He picked it back up again. He retook the test and passed it, no problem.
Yeah, it was about that time that people were branding Philip Tanner as being the second quarterback. Second running back, sorry, in that system. They had him being the backup, but I actually read that he'd broken his hand this week, which is not good if you're trying to claim the second spot on any running back depth chart, and not good for me because I just picked him up in a fantasy league, hoping that he would be the second backup when DeMarco Murray got injured. But I wouldn't want to wish injury upon anyone. So, Dallas, how do we think they'll fare this year? Do we think they've got a chance of winning their division, or are they going to be second or possibly even third behind Philly and New York Giants?
See, it's hard for me to look at this one objectively, but even looking at it objectively, I can't see them winning the division. I can see them finishing second and it being a very close contest. But so much is sort of dependent on Romo again continuing his form. But the biggest problem Dallas Cowboys have isn't anyone on their field. It's Jerry Jones. I mean, the guy can just demolish, you know, and teams and their confidence, and he can build up, you know, the opposition. I mean, look what he's done about inviting everyone to come down and watch a season opener against the Giants, and, you know, let's watch us kick the Giants' asses and all that. I mean, that doesn't help a team, you know. It's it fires up the opposition, and I think actually he's gonna have more of an influence, I think, really, than any player could have over the Cowboys season.
Yeah, I very much agree with you. He is a huge part. He's getting better, but he's still a bit of a pain, in all honesty. Right, so we'll move on to the defending Super Bowl champions. That pains me to say, the New York Giants. They had a fantastic season, or a fantastic end to the season last year, but the times were last year, they didn't look like they were going to make the playoffs. It took a freak moment almost for them to get there.
It did. I mean, it's what the Giants have actually... I mean, it's almost worrying as a Giants fan that we've had to rely for the last couple of seasons, really, on sort of moments that suddenly spark the team and sort of just ignite this passion. You know, you want this passion there from the beginning. And to be honest, this year, we are virtually the same team we were coming into the Super Bowl. In fact, maybe slightly worse, in the sense that even though we had a disastrous running season last year, and it's got even worse this season. We've got nobody to replace Jacobs. Bradshaw, God bless his soul, he tries really hard, but he's not going to be able to support the Giants rushing game at all, and unfortunately the Giants rushing game is what is keeping Manning so productive and playing so well.
Yeah, I do actually like Bradshaw this year personally myself. He is one of my top picks at running back. Like, obviously I don't take him too high, but I take him because he comes as a value. But I kind of think they're going to run a similar offense. They're going to have Bradshaw as the main back, and then they're going to use Wilson as a change of pace. I know he's not exactly a direct replacement for Brandon Jacobs, but they could use him as a change of pace on third downs for screens and short yardage passing. So
I think I agree with that. Yes, I mean, it'll be interesting to see actually how well Wilson does. You know, we've got some quite established third down screen type running backs. DJ Ware springs to mind. You know, they're very good at doing that. So it'll be interesting to see how well he fits into the offense.
Yeah, would you consider the New York Giants situation a clear cut handcuff, Ollie? Where if you draft Bradshaw, you need to go out and get Wilson in fantasy drafts?
think that could be a smart idea, but I'm very careful with bye weeks when drafting, so I probably would avoid it, although I did have to take Bradshaw in the second round because there was such a rush on running backs.
Yeah, one of the mantras of a very, very popular fantasy analyst is running backs come into the league. I know in your 20-team league that you're drafting for, that's probably a little bit less of a thing because even most of the deeper running backs are taken. But he is right. Running backs over the season do come in. And even if Bradshaw starts to get replaced by Wilson, I feel like you can replace him enough not to have to take Wilson as his handcuff. So the other thing with the Giants is, can Victor Cruz transition to being an outside number two receiver? Or will it be that he'll have to move back into the slot and potentially Reuben Randall goes out and plays on the outside as the number two receiver? How do you feel about this, Will?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Randall in action. I must be. I was when we lost Manningham, I was worried. I thought, well, you know, we have such a core of receivers of Cruz and Nicks and Manningham, and the fact that we got Randall in the second round of the draft, I was so happy about it. I didn't think he'd still be there, but Cruz, I think it's going to be a very interesting season for Cruz. The secret is out. I mean, you know, last season he burst onto the scene, and by the end of it, everyone was kind of, you know, knew him, knew what he could do, and he was getting some double coverage here and there. The secret is out on Cruz. Nix has to step back up, be the dominant receiver again, and then Cruz can start building himself back and sneaking in there, getting a few passes, and with Randall supporting it all.
Dan, how do you feel about the New York Giants wide receiver situation? Do you think it will be Cruz or Randall that will end up being the number two receiver?
I think it's a difficult one because Randall, he's just starting out. Do you really throw him in that early? I think Cruz is very talented, so I think I'd probably go with Cruz if it was up to me. Obviously, it's not, but
yeah. Right, out of the two receivers, Nix and Cruz, who would you draft first?
Nix for me, but that's just because I'm anticipating a little drop-off in Cruz this year.
I'd agree with that.
I'd still take the risk and go with Cruz.
Yeah, I would actually go with Nix because I feel Cruz is going to be a very much, like you say, possibly have a drop-off, but he's also one of them people that you fear is set to disappoint. Almost like one out of Graham and Gronkowski. They're now being drafted so high, you're buying into last year's production rather than looking for this year's production, and I think that's a dangerous move, but I would still be tempted to go Nix, but I'd probably take Cruz without too much worry at a certain level. A lot just depends on Eli Manning. If he has a good season, I think all of them, Nix, Cruz and Randall will have decent seasons, but if he doesn't, I think it could be tough for them. So New York Giants, right, do you guys feel that New York Giants can win the division this year?
I think they have the talent, but I think the Eagles will pip them to it this year.
I'd go with Giants winning, actually. I think the Eagles are very talented, but we'll talk about why I don't think they can do that when we come to them in a second.
Yeah, I think the Giants are going to take it. The only competition is going to come from the Cowboys, but I think they've still got the core we had last season, so they'll take it.
Okay, so we'll move on to Philadelphia. And before we get started, I'd just like to pause to say that there's been very sad news this week in Philly with Andy Reid's son, Garrett Reid, who was only 29, passing away. And as far as I'm aware, a cause of death has not been given. And I don't want to speculate on this. I just want to say that we're very sorry to hear about it. And with the death of the Titans wide receiver last week... I just hope that there's no more news like this in the coming weeks. It's horrible, and I'd love to be able to get focused on football and not on tragedies like this. But we have to talk about the football side in Philly, and I think the biggest news this week from the football side was Michael Vick declaring they can be a dynasty. Now, there was a bold claim last year from a quarterback that they could be the dream team, and that didn't live up. Is he going a step too far and just creating bad headlines before they start?
Yeah, he's putting too much pressure on the team. I mean, as you said, he declared last year that they were the dream team and that they were going to win it. And if you can't, they didn't back it up last season. It's just turning into a bit of a joke now, it must be said, with him doing that again. I don't think he's helping anybody.
Right. sorry, because I thought somebody else was going to start talking there. I don't like the Eagles, not as... predominantly I don't like Vic. I don't like him for the league. I don't for their division rather. I don't think they're going to do it. I can see them potentially making the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't. I mean, there's too much pressure on them from Vic. I mean, it wasn't actually him who did it last season. For some reason, it was Vince Young, their backup quarterback, who was calling them out as the dream team.
Oh, my apologies to Vic. Yeah.
So, well, if we can blame anyone, it's nice to be able to blame Vince Young for something. They've got, problems with their players just all over the shop. I mean, you've got, issues with DeSean Jackson, who's a very, very talented wide receiver, but boy, does he know it. And he likes to show off and he likes to showboat, and the amount of times he's muffed it up doing that has been absolutely hilarious for anyone who's not an Eagles fan. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't make the playoffs.
So, looking at the fantasy aspect of the team, you've obviously got Vic, McCoy, DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin and even Brent Celek. Which of these would you be most happy to draft, and whereabouts would you want to take them?
I mean, you're on to a winner if you get LeSean McCoy, but in terms of value, I think Jeremy Maclin would be one of the best options out of that bunch, because I don't think he's seen as one of the best receivers in the league, but I think he'll have a good season this year and put up some good numbers.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, Maclin is probably still going to be there, down the line, sort of sixth, seventh round, and I think he'd be a steal if you could get him down there. I'd definitely take him.
Yeah, I have actually seen him going there a lot in mock drafts, and I do own him on a few teams this year. And I actually recommended to my brother last year, he picked him up, and he had a lot of success with him until he had those minor injuries, which made him debatable for certain games, which was what the problem was with him last year. So if he can stay, I say sort of healthy, if you see what I mean, he needs to sort of be healthy-ish. You need to know he's on the field to be able to play, and that's the problem with him last year. You were never sure week to week whether he was actually going to play. And I think if that is sorted, I think he's a great fantasy option, and obviously LeSean McCoy is the best fantasy option there. But Vic, do you think he's the sixth or seventh maybe best quarterback, or even lower than that?
With his injury history, I'm completely avoiding him, to be honest.
Yeah, I actually feel you can get better value by waiting and getting very often Rivers or Matt Ryan than you'll get with Michael Vick.
Yeah, I've got Matt Ryan, but even later on, like Matt Schaub from the Texans, I think he'll come back and have a good year.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even take someone like Alex Smith over Vic as well.
Oh, wow.
yeah.
No, I'm not saying, oh, wow, because I just think that tells you a lot about the situation with Vic more than Alex Smith. I think Smith this year has the potential to be very good. He's got a great receiving area. He's got a lot of running backs that can keep the defense honest. I don't think that's a bad shout at all, Will. That's just a very bold statement that I wasn't expecting. So... Dan, you said you don't think they'll make the playoffs this year, the Eagles. Ollie, will playoffs for the Eagles, or are they going to be sitting third, potentially fourth in their division if Washington have a decent year?
No, I think they'll finish third. They won't make the playoffs. What I do think will happen, though, is what happened a couple of seasons ago, in that the Eagles will probably put in similar numbers to whoever wins the NFC West, and if had they been in another division, they'd have got a playoff berth.
I'm in the minority then, who think that they actually win the division. I don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there we go. Brent Celek will have a good year. I like Jeremy Maclin. The defense is quite good. And I don't think the Giants and Cowboys are that good that they'll push the Eagles down to third. So, yeah, I think they'll make the playoff.
Yeah, in all honesty, Ollie, I think the Eagles will either be first or last. I really do. I think it's either going to be a great season or it's just going to blow up in their faces. I really feel that could happen. Right, let's move on to one of the more intriguing teams in the Washington Redskins. Obviously, they made headlines with the big trade to go up and get Robert Griffin III. And they've signed a lot of, you'd call them second tier, maybe wide receivers with the potential to be first tier. Both in real life and in fantasy, they've got that potential to be sort of backup / real good starters if they get given the chance. Garcon showed how good he could be when a quarterback trusts him last year. And that quarterback was Curtis Painter. So if Robert Griffin is a decent quarterback, they've got a real chance. But will Robert Griffin run too much? That's the question.
Just on Garcon, he flourished when Don Orlovsky was under center. So if Griffin can throw the ball, then Garcon might be good. But he had trouble catching the ball when Peyton Manning was our quarterback. So who knows?
Yeah, a statement I actually heard on Garcon is he's very good once he catches the ball, with the emphasis on catching.
Yeah.
But no, they say he's very difficult to bring down and he's a good runner, as he had a lot of good runs after the catch. And that's the thing. Will, what do you think about Robert Griffin? Will he run too much?
I think he probably will do. But he probably won't do it for the entire season, because he'll start to realise very quickly that the NFL is a completely different kettle of fish to what he's been used to. And I think it's going to get, want of a better word, beaten out of him, that he really can't run as much as he'd like to. You know, as you said, that there were some receivers there who he's going to have to rely on. You know, it's his rookie season. He needs to learn how to play in an NFL. There's very few rookies that go in there and set the NFL alight, and he has the skills, there's no doubt about it, but he needs to settle in, and with a team like the Redskins at the moment, it's not the easiest team to do that with.
Yeah, I very much agree. The other big news, as always with the Washington Redskins and any Shanahan offense, is the running. There's three that are being talked about big time: Evan Royster, Roy Helu, and Tim Hightower. Which one do you feel is going to get the starting job?
A few weeks ago I was sure it was going to be Roy Helu, but now I'm coming around to the idea of Evan Royster.
All right, but I'd have said Helu, no problem, no doubt in my mind. So I'm curious to know.
I know it's only training camp, but Royster's been the first team running back, and I think he was named first on the depth chart, and he had a very, very good end to last year. So I'm coming around to the idea of Royster being the number one guy.
Yeah, a lot of people were taking Helu early in drafts, but that's starting to switch around. He's starting to drop a bit more. But as with any Shanahan offense, that could change. So let's put the fantasy angle on this. Which one would you draft first?
I'd probably take Royster higher than would have done.
I would take Helu over Royster, even if Helu doesn't necessarily get the same amount of carries as he did last season. I think he's more tradable, I think, still than Royster is at the moment.
No thought of going Hightower over them both? Or is he too much of an injury risk?
That would be my concern with Hightower, yeah.
Yeah, third or fourth running back. But Jason Lacanfora last week said that they had mentioned bringing in Ryan Grant or Cedric Benson to add even more headache for Redskins running back.
Well, I can safely say that my fantasy advice here might be to avoid them all, unless you can see into the future.
I agree with that. To be honest, there's no one on the Redskins team who I would really even consider drafting, it must be said at the moment.
Where I'd be tempted to draft them is in leagues that not many people play in, are best start leagues. So where you don't set your roster and it's just the best configuration of players gets in, that would be worth drafting them there, because I think whichever one plays will have a good game. The trouble is going to be, if you're setting your lineup, is trying to set which one is going to start. So I probably wouldn't draft them in your standard leagues, but in a best start league, I probably would I probably would draft one of them. It would just be taking my pick on which one was going to be the best each week. How do we feel the Redskins are going to do this year? Are they going to be bottom of that division? Are they going to be picking high up in the draft? Or are they going to have a good year?
I think they're going to have a good-ish year, but with the NFC East, I think, being the toughest division, I think a good year in the NFC East is still not going to be enough for them to really push for playoffs this year. I think next year, once RG3's settled in a bit more and they've started to appreciate how everyone works together a bit more, I think they're really starting to start push for a playoff. But I think this season, it's just not quite going to happen at the moment.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I can see them doing well. I wouldn't be surprised if they finish above the Eagles and the Eagles finish bottom. But I would be very surprised if RG3 pulls off a Cam Newton season.
If you follow me on Twitter, you probably know I've never been on the RG3 hype train. So I'll say they'll finish bottom of the division about 5, 6, maybe 7 wins. I don't think they'll do much this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think maybe along the line they'll be good, but this year could just be a year where everyone's got to kind of gel. And that could be interesting. They're still trying to work out who is the best running back there. I know that probably will never get sorted with Shanahan as your head coach. But they're also probably looking over the next draft and over the next offseason to just add a few more pieces maybe to that offense. Their defense is always strong with Ryan Kerrigan, with London Fletcher, and a decent defensive backfield that they have there. So I think the offense is what needs to click this year. They've got to take a few games off their division rivals if they want to do anything, but I think the wildcard could just be out of their reach. I think this division is going to be harder for us to really, for me to rank and for you all to agree. My personal feelings are probably that the Eagles are going to win it, followed by the Cowboys, followed by the Giants, followed by the Redskins.
Wow. That is bold. I can't agree with that in the slightest. To be honest, I think it's going to be the same as it was last season, to be honest. I don't think anything has changed that dramatically enough to alter that.
I'd agree with that.
Fantasy-wise for the Redskins, I think Fred Davis at tight end will be one of the better contributors this year.
That's if he can not get suspended. That's the only risk with him.
That's the problem. And I think he'll have the job nailed down because Chris Cooley just can't stay healthy whatsoever, kind of.
No, he's a little bit past it now in terms of his best days. How do you think the division will finish, Ollie?
Eagles to win it, Giants second, and then Cowboys third and Redskins bottom.
That's fair. I think probably maybe then the bigger question of the division will be, will one wild card come from this, or will it be that they just rob too many games off each other to supply a wild card?
Yeah, I think you've hit it on the head there. Yeah, that's always been the problem with the NFC East, is it just takes too many games off each other.
So you think it'll just be a division winner and then maybe one of them just missing out on a wild card?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I said it last week, I can see the Bears and potentially the Lions taking both of the wild cards for the NFC.
Okay, I think that's all we've got on the NFC East this week. And again, if you agree with us, don't agree with us, get in contact with us. Our email address is, again, thefourthandinchespodcast@gmail.com. And our Twitter feed is fourthandinchespod. That is as in the number 4 and then TH and inches pod. Okay, so Ollie, where can we find you?
You can either find my personal account at Ollie Dawes or at Second City Fanatics for the website and all articles through there.
And Dan, you're a Second City Fanatics writer, yeah?
I am, yeah. You can find my latest article is up on there today, which is about all the news coming out of the Bears training camp. And you can find me on Twitter at Diary of a Fat Geek.
And Will, you write for 1AM Sports?
I do, yes. You can find me writing mainly NASCAR articles for 1AM Sports. I just do the NFL in my spare time. So you can mainly find me at NASCAR Fans UK.
Thank you very much, guys. You can find me at BRolf1507. I do also tweet from at 1AM Sports and 4th and Inches Pod accounts. We have been the 4th and Inches podcast, and